Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome again here on Circles of Change. We're down here at the Festival of Books, and it's always a pleasure to encounter so many talented authors, but in particular to catch up with someone that's coming out with their very first book. Not that they're not well-versed in writing and the like, but it's one thing to then hold it in a compilation of books. So Harry Winters, welcome to Circles of Change.
Thanks very much.
It's great to have Harry here. Let me introduce him. He joins us today at the festival, debuting his new and first book, a 700-page plus masterpiece that actually was coined by a colleague as an everlasting monument to a people and a way of life undergoing rapid change. And that would be, of course, a reference to the Autumn tribe, the Autumn place names, meanings, origins, and histories. Arizona and Sonora is the name of Harry's book, but what we're going to talk about today really is the story behind the story that dates back to Harry at age 16, getting the opportunity to learn the complexities of the Autumn language by the elders, and then his eventual discovery of his own role of mathematics and geometry in its translation. A brief professional introduction: Harry founded and led the Winters Company for over 25 years, based here in Tucson, an international mineral industry consulting, engineering design, and construction management firm that at one time had over 100 employees. Backed by a master's and a PhD in geological engineering, a minor in economics from the University of Arizona, and then BS in physics from Arizona State, Harry is truly a recognized expert in base and precious metals, non-ferrous and ferrous alloy metals, and industrial minerals. He and his teams have evaluated minerals industry projects, company valuations for mergers, acquisitions, divestitures, and advised business strategies in this commercial environmental industry that's so rich in engineering and capital equipment design and investment. Before founding his own company, Harry was president and director of Pinnacock, Allen & Holt. He was a director of a Baker Mining Equipment Company and also vice president of McFarr Geophysics back in the early 70s. Active in the U.S. and Canadian technical societies in geology, mining, metallurgy, and exploration, Harry has worked extensively overseas, including Mexico and the Philippines. He also served our country in the U.S. Army as an intelligence analyst and a Spanish linguist. And now we can add author to those credentials, and who knows where this book might lead you next. Have you thought about that yet?
Well, I have given it a little bit of thought. I have a lot of friends around the state, groups of people other than the Autumn. People like the Yavapai people that we call Cuevacapaya up at Fort McDowell, and the Peeposh or Maricopa people that are out in the Levine area. And I enjoy visiting with them, and maybe someday something like this will come out of that.
But you've got to put quite a hustle on then, because if I understand correctly, when I had the chance to meet you in your wonderful office and library, you pulled out the very first journal from age 16, where you started to write down the intricacies of the language.
That's right.
And did it ever dawn on you that you were really launching on a journey that was going to take you some, 50 plus years?
No, I don't think so. I certainly, at the time, I was making the journals as a way of trying to understand how the language was structured, because as very soon after I had met Ton Autumn people at the village, mainly the village of Quahat, which is about 25 miles south of Casa Grande, Arizona, mm-hmm. These people were so friendly to me and so nice, but it was impossible to talk to them because the elders did not speak English. So I had to learn. I wanted to learn, and that became a major thing with me, was learning to speak the language and speak it well. And so those journals and things that I was doing, I was writing down so I could try to analyze the language myself and try to figure out what was going on so I could put new sentences together and things.
Because, quite honestly, it's not a language that's documented otherwise, is it?
There, at that time, there was very little. Mm-hmm. There were one or two treatises, but they were quite short, quite brief. The dictionaries that came many years after that.
The kind of people, I think, Harry, you were starting to talk to me when we first met, that the elders that you got connected with, I mean, these were men and women, some of them born in the late 1800s, so that what came not with just the language, but I would imagine the history of their people.
That's right. A lot of the people that I met were born in the 1880s or maybe mm-hmm. even earlier. And they, again, very, very friendly folks, but they had, the families that I initially met were very traditional people. And they had lived in traditional ways. They had farmed by the flash flood farming methods. They were cowboys. They had made the annual trips back and forth between their fields. We call Oiduk and the well villages that we call Vavya. And so moving with the seasons like that. And a lot of these people, some people were interested in their history. Some people were interested in their language. Some people were interested in their plants and mm-hmm. Some were hunters, but these people, many of them paid a huge amount of attention to detail. You know, the older people, they really knew the details of the land. And so going around with them and being a persistent cuss, and asking lots of questions, probably driving a few of them crazy, actually learned, a great deal from those old people who are, those very old timers are gone now, but their children still were very well informed. And those people, which we today probably have to include myself, we call Hook Yaw Tom, had a lot of knowledge. The younger generations, are missing that.
Yeah.
And, which, is one of the reasons that a few years ago I decided I was going to set all this down, because otherwise it will be lost.
So that's where this path of recognizing you, in many regards, had a compelling responsibility to turn it over into the written word.
Well, I probably wouldn't put it that way myself. It was fun, but I was determined that to give something for all the friendship and everything that had been given to me over the years, here's a gift back that will make a permanent record of how it used to be.
Harry, back to when you were 16 or 20 or whatever, choosing to spend so much of your time immersed in this. This is not the common, ordinary fascination of a young person. I mean, granted, we all might have passions about collecting things, whether it be stamps or dolls or engines or cars. But to collect people and to collect history and culture and collect things that you may not have even known what you were collecting, that inquisitive side of you, I can see the parallel of how you obviously were driven academically then to go through geology all the way through a PhD. So some of these scientific approaches, whether it was ethnography or data collecting, you also used in your professional life then. Maybe it was training for that.
Yeah. Well, I've always been a person who loves the outdoors.
There you go.
And I think I mentioned in my book, there's always been a tug in me between my interest in math and physics and things like that and my interest in just being out of doors.
Outside, yeah.
And probably got me into a little trouble in undergraduate college, because I remember one of my physics advisors saying to me, Harry, you should be home studying physics on the weekend, not out panning gold somewhere. Anyway, that's been a constant thing with me. But when I was 13 or 14 years old, I came across a book called Lost Mines and Buried Treasures Along the Old Frontier by John Mitchell. And I tell people that was probably the most formative book in my life. Because I love to go out prospecting around, and that's really what led me originally into the northern part of what today is the Tonawatam Nation, because there were a number of very famous old mining camps out there,
right,
the
yeah.
Turning Point, the V-Coal, Copperosity. And we just wanted to see him. And my friends and I I had a group of friends, probably four, five, six very close friends, and we thought alike. We if we weren't out hunting on the weekend, we were out trying to find some old mining camp or this or that. And it was just natural when I ended up out there and then met these people who were mm-hmm. so nice to be around that, then I started shifting my focus that way, and that's really really how it got started.
It would be interesting if we still had the pleasure of knowing some of those people they've passed on to say, why in the world did you pick up on this young 14 to 16 year old and give him access? Because truly you were brought into the inner circles of their life.
Yeah, I can't tell you. I think one of the things that's always been important with the Autumn, and it would be true if you were with the Yavapai or Apache.
Probably any tribe.
The important thing is to respect the elders. Mm-hmm. You have to have a respectful, polite, courteous attitude. And if you don't, and if you're not willing to listen and pay them the attention that they deserve, then you're not ever going to really be welcomed or accepted. But if you do that and accept that things the way they are, then you will be. And
that actually sounds like life lessons that serve us well in any walk of life, whether it be dealing with the elders or performing well in business or nonprofit ventures. We're speaking with Harry Winters today here at the Tucson Festival of Books, his brand new book, a 700-page masterpiece that we'll talk shortly, not just about the text that's within, but also the photographs. It's called The Autumn Place Names, Meanings, Origins, and Histories of Arizona and the Sonoran. The photographs that are throughout the book, you had a pleasure of partnering with a colleague from the University of Arizona.
I did. Through some friends here in Tucson, Larry Marshall, Richard Bruska, I was made aware of Peter Cresson. Peter taught the introductory geology courses at the University of Arizona for decades. He is a natural teacher. He's an excellent teacher. And in addition to doing that, he was an associate photographer for Arizona Highways.
Great. So he's
and I was told this is the guy. Photographs are a crucial part of this book because many of the place names and the Ton Autumn and Akmariotum place names in Arizona and Sonora, these names are based on geometry. They're based on the shapes of hills. And if you're going to convey that to a reader, you have got to illustrate it. Well, there's no better way than with a well-done photography and a few sketches that I've made to bring out salient points. But, Pete traveled with me, and there are about 150 color photographs. Color is important.
Yeah.
150 color photographs. And he did an excellent job. My wife, Susan, took a number of photographs that are in the book. And did a very, very good job of that, too. So, but Peter is anybody that wants to learn Arizona geology in 48 hours needs to take a drive with Pete.
I love you. And in fact, you started us down that path. I can still see, and for our listeners that listen to our show, they're all often watch me in operation making all these salient connections. But you can see where, Harry, your love and passion and culture and society and the language propels you, though, when you hooked into this whole intellectual expose, I'll call it, of mathematics and geometry. I mean, what a convergence. Did that, like, hit you at the side of the head, or was this a slow revelation to you to recognize the role of math?
Well, it took me a while to realize what was going on with these names. There are certain names, and I can say a few of them, words that we use. Gewlik, komlik, komat, kavut, Kawlik, Kavich, Kavich, and these names are all based on geometry. They're the shape of things, and you can see when you look at examples of 8, 9, 10 of these hills that have this particular name and shape, you can begin to abstract the way the old Autumn abstracted the critical features of it, or the geometrical or topological features, and then they transform to other hills. So you really see how the ancient Autumn mind was working. And then I would ask the people, well, how do you use this in other circumstances? So, like the word Gewlik, which describes a certain shape of hill, also describes the scorpion's tail.
Yes.
Gewlik.
Yeah.
Or your belt, Gewlik. And the more of that you get, the more you see how, these people, even the ancient people, their ability to abstract and transfer these abstractions to other things was operating. Very, very smart, clever people.
Well, and in fact, anyone who's involved in narrative art, that's exactly what you'll see, whether it be the pictographs that were in the caves, that then got translated into other forms of the languages. Mm. Now, Harriet, part of your book, of course, this gift back, as you called it, is in the term critical language. That's for languages that we are fearful are going to be extinct based on generations. Is that correct?
Well, if you just look at the state of Arizona and you look at the number of languages we have, native languages, there are three major groups. They're the so-called Uto-Aztecan, which includes the Pima and Papago, the Tonawatam, Akamaliawatam, those languages. We have the Athabascan languages, which include Apache and Navajo, and which mm-hmm. unfortunately I don't speak. We have,
but there's still time. That might be your next
time
project.
For that.
Okay.
The Yuman languages, and that was broken into two major groups: the river people, who are the Mojaves, the Yumas, and the Maricopas, and then the upland people, who are the Hualapai, Havasupai, Yavapai, those peoples. And these languages are regarded as being in danger of dying out. But all of these groups of people, almost all, have programs going for what they call revitalization, mm-hmm. which is a good work. I think revitalization is a better word than preservation. But they're very good at
it. Because you want to bring it into using it.
Using culture
right.
camps, using yes. Native language-speaking instructors. And I've had a wonderful experience with that at Fort McDowell, with the program they have there for the Yavapai language. These people really need to be complimented, and I'd like to take 1 second to say something to those people that are doing this, working in the revitalization program of the Autumn. I say, Nako kanya sigi oit.
Which is?
That means keep at it.
Keep at it. Go at him, Charlie, right?
Don't let go.
Well, you mentioned Peter Crisson as far as being a contributor to this journey of yours to write your book. I think you also indicated to me that one of the very early manuscripts for your idea of the book actually went through a peer-reviewed journal process with a doctor.
Well, we had initially been thinking of having the book published by the U of A Press. And Dr. Dunkel, Alex Dunkel, who's the director of the critical languages and a very good friend of mine, he was working with me on that. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there were delays due to changes going on at the press. Well, I shouldn't say unfortunately. I guess it didn't really work out that way because I was lucky enough to be introduced to your husband, Ted Larson.
Ted Larson and Night
Horses. And he ended up doing an absolutely beautiful job. So we couldn't have hoped for a better job anywhere.
Which is, it's funny how sometimes you run into roadblocks yeah. and they're signposts to go in a different direction.
But in the process at the University of Arizona, Dr. Dunkel did have a peer review done, and for which I thank him very much. And
the idea of turning your child over to a group of peers and to get their feedback, that's such a thorough and important vetting of a creation, but at the same time, you might have had to brace yourself for the response, but you got good feedback and very helpful reactions.
You got very positive feedback.
Nice.
and from very very knowledgeable people. So that was a real plus. That made me feel good.
That's great. So you've got the text, you've got the photographs, you've got the critical review and go ahead from your peers, but boy, to make the machine come together from an artistic and a design standpoint. I know you have had the great pleasure working with Bob Marcialis.
Bob Marcialis is a great guy. He produced the camera ready copy in using a language called LaTeX, mm-hmm. a program, and it worked out very well. It was very, very good for integrating the photography and the literature cited and all that. Bob did a wonderful job of that, and he worked with me on this for, I'm guessing, 2 years.
And what's fun, of course, just like your diverse background, just like actually my husband Ted's diverse background, but Bob being a PhD in space science and also, you know, quite honestly, a professional umpire.
Smart guy.
but I can imagine what the design reviews were with all these energetic, intellectual people in the room at the same time.
Smart guy, yeah.
That's great. Well, you're here at the festival, of course, and for those interested, we'd love to have you come down and have an opportunity to speak with Harry directly about his magnum opus. opus, at least his first one, called The Autumn Place Names, Meanings, Origins, and Histories of Arizona and Sonora. Come and join us at the Night Horses booth, which is number 464, right in front of Sonnet Science Center and across from Booksman's on the Mall. Early indications, what kind of feedback have you gotten from some of the people you've given copies to so far?
They've been very, very positive, and my hope is that as various autumn read the book, that they will call me up or say, how come you didn't put this name in, or
right.
how come you didn't come down here? So I hope one day there will be another one twice as thick.
Twice as thick. I like that. Volumes 2, 3, 4, and 5 and beyond that. You know, I think I'm just still smiling about you're looking for a reason to travel around with your friends and be out in the field. If I might also recognize that you're then your pursuit of geology and being outdoors in the mining industry. There's a real connection here for all of that, Harry.
Yeah, well, when I was younger, when I was in the Osage in high school, I was very interested in prospecting, but what I missed was it was so much fun, I never thought anybody'd actually pay to do it. So when I was about halfway through college, I woke up and realized that that possibility was out there. So I originally got into the mining field through the exploration and evaluation of deposits, but one thing leads to another, and you know, if you have a mind of, that's interested in learning new things, mm-hmm. and trying new things, why eventually we ended up designing some fairly major mining projects, and as you say, we worked all over the world.
Yes, and in fact, your pursuit, I think you had said to me when we were talking about your book and just your feelings for the state of Arizona, that actually most of your mining work was outside of the state, and it was in Mexico and also overseas?
I would be hard put to tell you the percentage in Arizona. We did work, I'm certain that we worked on every major copper project in the state of Arizona.
Oh, you did, okay.
But outside of that, we helped... at one point helped Goldman Sachs privatize the largest undeveloped copper deposit in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
We worked with Merrill Lynch on the initial public offering of the largest copper mine in China. So we were a lot of places and did a lot of fun things.
I like that. A lot of places, a lot of fun time. That goes back to the name of your book of place names, origins, and histories, this being outdoors and being in the field. The changes that's happening to the mining and environmental industry over the years, though, it seems to me, it sounds like you've continued to ride that wave and seen over the years opportunities to contribute in new ways.
You just have to adapt as the new regulations come along. It increases the load of engineering.
In fact,
you could almost say that new engineering disciplines are created as a result of it. So it just means more work.
Yeah, that's right. More work and more opportunity. And for certainly, as you said, when then you bring in the new tools and technology, whether it be computer modeling or the capability to make this magnificent equipment, you were also part of that made the mines work.
That's right. We were involved both in we were actively involved in development of some of these properties.
Yeah, that's right. Well, what a pleasure. Harry Winters, again, his book is The Autumn Place Names, Meanings, Origins, and Histories, Arizona and the Sonoran. Harry, back to some of your initial comments. The opportunity you had shared with me to be pulled in close by a medicine man of the tribe and one of the elders. Mm. Maybe you could share a story on that one.
Well, the word that's used is makai, and it really comes from the word that means to know things. But early on, I would say 1956, 1957, there was a girl in the Quad Village. She was the daughter of a very close friend, and she was ill, seriously ill. I didn't realize how seriously ill. In any event, there were two Mamakai from different places that were treating her. And the one weekend that I was down there for a fiesta, a dance and all, I was going to spend the night sleep on I had put my sleeping bag mm-hmm. on a cot outside the houses there, and this one fellow who his name was Ismail Luis, he was from Baviachin, and he was there. He was one of the ones treating the girl, and when it came time to go down to be around the fire and be at the dance and all, he came to me and he says there.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.